Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I come to work with two hands every day, and I'm trying to bless somebody.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny, and there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
It's Tuesday, October 11th. Oh, man. What a show we have to do here today. I don't have to welcome you to the show. That's a favorite of mine personally. But we do have to say hello to the Archbishop of Adjustments, Andy Behrens himself. Andy, quite a run of titles here for you, my friend.
I'm pretty sure that's not even a royal title. I think that's just a church title, right? And maybe the archbishop isn't even as good as the bishop. Is the bishop better than the archbishop? Which direction can they move on a chessboard? I have no idea. Are they even on a chessboard? I'm not sure. I'll take it. Would I rather be an archduke? Probably. But sure, I'll take archbishop. Remember when I was like king? Remember a few weeks ago I was an actual king.
Yeah, you were a king, you're a wizard, and now you're just an archbishop. But that's an important title too, okay? So let's give yourself some credit. And there's a lot of adjustments that we have to make right around here, you know, heading into week six. So we need you on this path, Andy. And we do, of course, have all of our usual waiver content coming up on the show today. The guys to add at each position, some players to drop, some players to hold on loosely. But we also have a lot of business to attend here before we jump right into it. So let's get started here. Big news of the day broke this morning. The Panthers have completed a mercy firing of Matt Rhule is what I'm going to call this, because look, it was over. I think honestly you could argue that it was over last year for Matt Rhule in Carolina, but you know, Matt Rhule gets to pocket $40 million here for the rest of the contract. I mean, there's some offset language, whatever. He'll ride off into the sunset, probably be like, I don't know, you know, Nebraska, Arizona State, whatever. I don't know college football that well. He'll be some college football HC, rebuild a program there. He'll be fine. It was donezo in Carolina. They move on. Steve Wilks is the interim head coach. Phil Snow, oddly enough, the defensive coordinator, he's like a Matt Rhule crony. So, of course, he goes out the door with Matt Rhule. But the defense is kind of the one bright-ish spot in Carolina. Ben McAdoo still attached to this operation. You know, meanwhile, Andy, Baker Mayfield's expected to miss at least a couple weeks with a sprained ankle. So we're going to get PJ Walker, who is a total Matt Rhule guy, starting for this team. Reactions, thoughts, takeaways. Like I said, this feels almost merciful in a way by David Tepper.
Yeah, first of all, the crowd shots from Carolina this past weekend, unbelievable, right? Like literally no Panthers fans to be found anywhere. Just yeah. nothing but red jerseys. Seemed like a partisan Niners crowd. So that's bad. Rhule, as you say, is going to be fine. Perfectly fine college coach. I'm a fan of a Big Ten West team, and I look forward to welcoming Matt Rhule to Nebraska or, you know, wherever else he lands. Nebraska seems like a strong possibility. Who knows? Weird that Ben McAdoo is sticking around to maintain that offensive juggernaut that we'd come to so enjoy in Carolina. The other thing, and we talked about this a little bit on FFL on Sunday, the schedule like only now gets really rough for Carolina. So like, however much these guys have disappointed you, you know, it started with the Niners and now we get the Rams and then we get the Bucks and the Bengals are coming. And there's just like a bunch of, there's a bunch of salty defenses on that schedule ahead. And they're in this crazy transitional period. DJ Moore is like 50 yards in a good week. Christian McCaffrey is preserving fantasy value, but like that's it. There's nobody else you can touch here. And DJ Moore is that difficult sort of, guys like this almost become, I think DJ Moore is a wonderful player. I'll just say that. But guys like this are almost toxic on a fantasy roster. It's like the Allen Robinson situation last year where you're like, he's good. I can't drop. How can I drop a guy this good? And you'll never start him. And he has zero trade value, right? Like there's no, what are you going to do? Throw him on the trade block. Everybody knows he's on the trade block. He's not helping you. And you can't play him. I don't know. Guys like this just burn a roster spot and it puts you at a serious disadvantage.
Yeah, it's rough. And I know that like there's the idea that it can't get much worse than Baker Mayfield. And look, it really, I don't know that it can get much worse, but just because Baker Mayfield, who was the stone worst quarterback in the NFL by any measure, you know, completion percentage over expectation, EPA per dropback, watching him play, that good old-fashioned measure of watching Baker Mayfield double clutching the ball in the pocket, bad news, okay?
Yeah.
Whatever comes next, not going to be good. it can't get much worse, but I don't think that means it's going to get better here for the Carolina Panthers. And it's crazy how quickly this situation rotted. I talked about this on the Nerd Thursday podcast with Dalton Del Don, and you know, he's like, what went so wrong with DJ Moore? It's like, this ecosystem is completely rotted. Like, there's an alternate universe, Andy, where, you know, Teddy Bridgewater is the bridge quarterback for this team, keeps them afloat. Joe Brady's the offensive coordinator.
Sure.
You know, Matt Rhule just like wasn't cut out for this thing. But the first year of like the Matt Rhule experience really wasn't that bad, right? Like, looking back on it,
right,
the Teddy Bridgewater year, Joe Brady as the offensive coordinator, you know, Curtis Samuel 1,000 total yards, DJ Moore 1,000 yards, Robbie Anderson 1,000 yards. It just went so bad so quickly because this team is completely mismanaged.
Yeah, the other thing I'll say, I meant to comment on PJ Walker. He's at least kind of fun bad. I would say like his highlights, both on the good side when they occasionally happen and on the bad side, are like must watch moments. So we kind of have that to look forward to. Clearly not a good quarterback, not the guy that you want to necessarily sustain drives in the NFL, anything. Like, I have no hope for Panthers fans. I don't know how many Panthers fans remain, but I have no hope to offer them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I know a lot of Panthers fans. I've had, you know, my days with the Panthers, and it's just, this is one of the weirdest and most depressing franchises in the entire NFL right now, because, you know, there's no way that, like, all this does come back to ownership too.
I was just going to say, it's one of those, like, you can't fire the owner situations, yeah. Right? And that's what all this really comes back to.
Right. And there are owners that just don't care whether the team wins or loses. I think David Tepper does care if the team wins or loses. He just clearly so far does not know how to build a winner. You know, maybe he learns on the job, whatever. But so far, not so great for David Tepper and the Carolina Panthers. So we'll see what happens there. But I agree with you. Like, there's no value to be had here. DJ Moore, like, you know, we're going to talk about guys like Ken Walker on this show. If it was between like adding a guy like Ken Walker or dropping DJ Moore, I'd be fine dropping DJ Moore, because tell yourself the story how this gets much, much better. I don't know that you can do it.
Yeah. Last week was the first time on Twitter when, you know, people will ask you, hey, I'm interested in adding so and so. Who's my drop? Here's three guys. Last week was the first week that I selected DJ Moore from a couple of rosters, because you just start looking ahead at the schedule again and you're like, when the hell am I ever going to play this guy? And that was with Baker. That was with theoretically a better quarterback situation. There's no spot ahead where I'm like, yeah, fire up DJ Moore for that one. So I do actually think he's a pretty obvious drop in a lot of leagues.
All right, let's move on to recapping Sunday Night Football here. Ravens 19, Bengals 17. A lot of like micro takes we can have with players, both teams, whatever. But I definitely came away from that game last night, Andy, thinking, and specifically on the Bengals side of it, there are so many teams in the NFL right now that I feel like are still trying to figure it out. And I think the Bengals perfectly encapsulate that. Like, we're about to enter week six, and I don't know if the Bengals are that good. I don't know if the Ravens are that good. Like, how many teams do you think right now in the NFL, just off the top of your head, you can say for sure are verifiably good and like know who they are from an identity perspective?
Oh yeah, that's a really small number. I don't know. Do you think is it a half dozen? Is it?
I don't think so. I think it's fewer. Off the top of my head, like, definitely Buffalo. Definitely, I think Kansas City. They play tonight, obviously, but I think they fit into this group. I think the Eagles. They know who they are, and I think they're a good team. That's where it's sort of lose it after.
Yeah,
right?
That might be right. Yeah, clearly the Packers don't know who or what exactly they are right now. The Buccaneers, who sure as should know who they are, right? Like, don't seem to know who they are exactly at this moment, and came weirdly close to losing in week five. Yeah, no, it's a fair point. I thought the Sunday night game was about as, I don't know, maybe it's too generous to these two teams, but I thought it was about as poor a game as these teams can play together. It wasn't, I don't know. Like, we had Lamar missing throws that would have made this a more exciting game. Couple of deep shots. By the way, I love when teams take deep shots on like fourth and short. It's pretty much my favorite thing in football, because you could even see the Bengals were, you know, defenses fall into this trap, and fans fall into a trap of thinking that, okay, if it's like fourth and two, we really only have to defend the 2 yards in front of us instead of defending the whole field. So I love teams taking deep shots. I know it didn't work, but I think it was Tylan Wallace was the receiver. And Jackson, a better ball is an easy walk-in touchdown. So I loved the call, hated the execution. Just a couple of misfires from Lamar on the night. Burrow wasn't great. Joe Mixon is a weird story at this stage of the fantasy season, right? Because if the only number that I told you about Joe Mixon was that he has 116 touches and he leads the NFL in touches, you'd be like, oh man, what a golden ticket season this is for Joe Mixon. But he's averaging 3.7 yards per touch, not per carry, per touch. The receptions aren't going anywhere. He's coming off like the best game of his season in terms of efficiency. Basically, I think it was the first game that he was over maybe 3.1 yards per carry. So a decent night in terms of efficiency, but he's just, I mean, you guys just saw the Sunday night game. Like, he doesn't really get anything going. Like, there's no push from the offensive line. I'm starting to wonder if he's not, I mean, Joe Mixon, like 4 years ago, got hit in the backfield all the time and made miraculous things happen on it. And that's not happening as often now. So he's a problem, because this is a lot of touches that he has to this point, and he has almost nothing to show for it. One touchdown, I think. And again, like, woefully inefficient season.
It kind of harkens me back to the podcast that Scott and I did prior to this season about like running backs and age curves and when these guys typically fall off. So Joe Mixon just turned 26 in July, but he's also kind of an old 26, because he came into the NFL in 2017. He's had plenty of workhorse seasons, and, you know, like 26, 27 is right around the time he's like, based on Scott's preseason study, that you sort of kind of start to raise your eyebrow at running backs. And it is just worth wondering if he has lost a step. And although I still am less concerned, I mean, shoot, maybe he's fallen off, whatever. I have no idea. But with any of these guys, it's more so about the ecosystem to me, Andy. And that's kind of like my original point here. There's so many of these teams are still trying to figure themselves out. I don't think the Bengals have. Like, I think the Bengals have weirdly, they need to find a middle ground between the team they were last year and the team they've been this year, because the team that they were last year, we know, was so based on like deep passing and, you know, like, F it, Jamar is down there somewhere, you know, and that stuff worked. That stuff's hard to repeat. But then you look at it last night, Andy, Joe Burrow, here's the good news, was only pressured on 13.5% of his dropbacks. Here's the bad news, was getting rid of that thing at 2.28 seconds and average air yards 3.4 yards per attempt. That's rough from an air yards perspective. So, you know, they kept trying to kind of get Jamar Chase going in the screen game and the underneath game, but like, there's got to be a middle ground between being so vertically inclined and then what they were last night. And here's the thing, right? Like, the Bengals could, in December, have figured it out, and the Bengals could be the Bengals that we assumed that they were going to be this year, but it might take a long time to get to that. And I feel like I could say that for at least, and this is kind of like the macro point of it here, I feel like I could say that about 15 teams right now, and there's no doubt that that's having an effect on people's fantasy seasons, because people are pissed about the Jamar Chase thing, and I think that he's like that is a symptom of the larger disease, basically.
I think this is a team that they knew what they wanted to be coming into the season, right? Offensively, and in super simple terms, it was going to be basically, you know, if you're playing fine, you want to play cover two against us, and you want to take away a lot of the deep shots that were so spectacular last year, that's fine. We're going to run it down your throat, except that they're not able to run it down anybody's throat. I think they thought that they had, I certainly thought that they had the offensive line upgrades necessary to do it. I have always thought that Joe Mixon was a really, really good back. And if, you know, it, despite your best intentions, if you're only rushing for like 3 yards a carry, 2.9 yards a carry, when you're, you know, when you're in run it down their throat mode, that's just not going to cut it. So far it's been completely successful to try to take away all the deep opportunities from this team, and they don't really have a counter.
Is it as simple as just saying that, like, so far their offensive line rebuild has been a failure? Is that as simple as it is for the Bengals?
It shouldn't be, but it seems like that's one of the answers, right? I'm sure some of it is Joe Burrow wanting to do some hero things too, right? He's got a little Big Ben in him, in that he wants to extend plays and make miraculous things happen, and sometimes that'll work. But the line has certainly been a disappointment. It's not the only problem, but it is certainly the one thing. You know, I was so bullish on the Bengals because I thought, man, this is a team that didn't make the splashy skill position signing necessarily, or they didn't draft anybody that we're just going to go crazy for, but they knew they had a big problem. They definitely addressed it in free agency. You can't say that they didn't, you know, swing pretty big at fixing this thing in free agency. It just hasn't materialized.
And we've got problems too coming out of this whole thing for Cincinnati. Left tackle Jonah Williams is day to day with an ankle injury, and T. Higgins also day to day with an ankle injury. I think that's worth talking about here. Ankle sprain for T. Higgins. Like, nobody's saying that it's a high ankle sprain, but it might be a high ankle sprain for T. Higgins. Might honestly be like similar to the injury that Amon-Ra St. Brown is dealing with, where he missed a week and then he came back on a pitch count. Luckily, I think Detroit runs into their bye this week. That's good for them. Can't say the same for the Bengals here. If you have T. Higgins on your fantasy team, and I do have T. Higgins on a fair amount of fantasy teams, I'm not feeling great about it. How are you feeling?
No, I would need to see, I need to see a full practice on a Friday, right? Like, if T. Higgins doesn't practice this week and he's like limited on Friday, and then they're like, he's game time decision and he plays, I'm gonna rank him like wide receiver 50. I'll be terrified to start him, because he was a spectator for much of that game. It's obviously, there's a lot they can do for an ankle sprain in the NFL, unless it's of such severity that, you know, you just can't move laterally. And maybe that's what he's dealing with right now. If it is, like, I mean, you absolutely can't play him. And like the byes are just hitting, like, you're going to be tempted to play T. Higgins if he's active. But we now run the risk of him just not being on the field at all.
And I think this is also a Bengals thing again, because so much of what the Bengals were built on last year was like, we have these two number one level receivers that can both do all the alpha stuff across from each other and go try and stop that. So far this year, T. Higgins has been banged up at various points of the year, and he's been great when he hasn't been banged up, but he has been banged up. And teams are doing so much to take away Ja'Marr Chase on deep passes, and the Bengals are, last night notwithstanding, just running him on go route, go route, go route, go route stuff. It's been insane. Like, basically, it's the receiver equivalent, Andy, of when teams like run into heavy boxes, right? Like, just yes. Take like 2 yards in a cloud of dust into a heavy box. That's the same thing as like, oh, they've got two, you know, it's a cover two defense, and you know, the safety's shaded to this side, and the corner's manned up on Ja'Marr. Like, we're gonna just keep running go routes, go routes, go routes. That's the receiver equivalent of that. So they haven't at any point had like two elite number one receivers firing off at the same time. So it's all symptomatic of this. Really, really tough stuff. Quickly on the Ravens here, you know, you mentioned some of the receiver misses. You know, they're obviously missing their number one receiver last night in Rashad Bateman. And Andy, I feel like, you know, obviously Bateman's injured now. That's a bummer. I feel like people out there that are complaining about Rashad Bateman prior to the injury, like, I just don't think you have the stomach for fantasy, because he had a good game, a great game, and then a slow game, and then he got injured in week four. Like, welcome to the wide receiver position, right? But I feel like missing Tylan Wallace on that deep route, like, some of that can be on the receiver from a timing perspective too. Like, you expect him to be in one place. Like, hey, maybe if that is Rashad Bateman, they take the shot on the fourth down there, like, that could easily be complete. So feel like you felt that absence there, as much as Devin Duvernay is a good player and I think like a useful guy for them, still feel that absence. And like, I think we might have weeks like this with J.K. Dobbins, Andy, where we have no idea that like another running back is going to mix in coming into the game. Because if you have J.K. Dobbins, like you felt so good coming in that game last night, and then you feel real terrible coming out of it.
I also feel like, you know, a lot of that is that Justice Hill had actually earned his snaps, right? Like Justice Hill had some really nice moments this season, some of the best of his pro career. And so I like no issues there. He deserved to be on the field. But when he was out, you were like, well, what has Mike Davis done? What has Kenyon Drake done? Like, none of these guys have done a thing. They haven't really earned their playing time. They weren't special in any way on Sunday night. That is really frustrating, because this was, you know, this is part of the miracle of J.K. Dobbins' rookie season, is he was getting all that done and he was scoring every week in the second half of the season without actually playing that much. It's not like that was a function of J.K. Dobbins getting 25 touches a game. That was never happening. He'd be in the low double digits, but the run game generally for that team was so dominant that it could support him and Lamar and Gus Edwards, and everybody was eating. It's not necessarily like that anymore. Lamar basically always gets his. He was obviously fun throughout the game. Despite missing a couple throws, Lamar is always a blast to watch. But yeah, it was a letdown game for J.K. Dobbins coming off. The multiple touchdown performance, little bit of action as a receiver, that was exciting to see, because I've never really thrown to backs before, so that was good. But I mean, there's obviously going to be better days ahead for Dobbins. It's just a little bit frustrating fantasy wise that they keep rolling out, you know, the same corpses and keep getting the same result.
Yeah, and I feel like, again, you might just get these games with Dobbins, because who knows where he is from a health perspective. I think that's the thing too, like it took him a long time to even play, right? Like this year, so that we might have points where they notice an aggravation, especially late in the week. And they have no reason to tell you that like ahead of the game. So we might get, you know, Kenyon Drake was a healthy scratch last week. Then this week we got what we got. So troubling if you have J.K. Dobbins on your fantasy team. But unless you got anything else on Sunday night, we can move into the waivers.
The one other thing I will say about the game was that, and we'll talk about him in the tight end ads, it was a pretty good Hayden Hurst game. Like, this is two games in a row that they've leaned on him, and that's probably going to continue. And maybe it's a function of the T. Higgins injury. It probably is, but that should continue for at least another week.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good call out, and we'll definitely hit on him when we get to the tight end section. It, definitely a guy that I wish I had thought about a little more, but you can say that about every tight end that isn't,
Taysom
I wish
Hill.
I thought about it. Andy, I said it to Scott on the podcast last night, so I know the listeners have already heard this, but I never want to get into the positional eligibility civil wars on fantasy Twitter. But I will say that in a dynasty league, I swapped out an injured Kyle Pitts. And by the way, my backup tight end is Jonnu Smith, who's also hurt. And I had Taysom Hill because it was a super flex league, and I used to roster him because of the quarterback. And I put him in my tight end spot. And this league, I scored 247 points in. Like, I would have won regardless of Taysom Hill, but seeing like 36 points in my tight end spot from Taysom frickin' Hill, I'll admit that even I felt like, I don't know if that's right. I don't know if that's right.
I will say it's almost not murky from a position eligibility standpoint, because the team lists him there. Like, this isn't a situation where he has a positional designation that doesn't appear on the team's website and in any official team listing. Like, he's on the depth chart and he's listed on the roster as a tight end. I just love that he's listed at the one position that he definitely isn't playing, right? Like, he's not in any way. You call him a running back if you want to. You call him a lot of things, but he's certainly not a receiver. That he's barely been a rumor as a receiving threat.
And it's the one position that like fantasy folks are struggling the most to figure out. So yeah, there's a lot going on there, but all right, that will be enough on Taysom Hill. Although we're going to talk about him a little bit later, let's move into the running back section here of our waiver wire pickups. And we got to have a pretty big conversation here about Kenneth Walker III. Rashad Penny, unfortunately, going to miss the rest of the season. I feel terrible for Rashad Penny, because he like literally just said the week prior how much the injuries affected him and how much he hated it. You know, I think we put so much on players, like, and he even said, like, I felt like I was letting the fans down. It's like, dude, I mean, you're feeling it so much yourself. So that's a whole nother thing. But Kenneth Walker, though, certainly becomes like a clear cut empty the clip guy for.
Yeah, I feel like this is the first time all season that we've had a guy where we can just say whatever you've, you know, almost without respect to what your positional needs are, you should probably still place an aggressive bid. And it should probably, like, if you have a need right now, you're 2 and 3, you're hell. If you're anything and you have even the moderate need at running back. And that's the other thing about fantasy is you're like, you never have enough running backs. Even when you think you have enough running backs, you don't have enough running backs. So you should probably just empty the wallet for Kenneth Walker. Really, really good player. I'm not breaking any news here. I would think almost any college football fan saw him last season, right? 1,600 yards at Michigan State. One man wrecking crew, single-handedly won some games for that team. He's got sub 4.4 speed, decisive. He's just coming off a phenomenal season, averaged over 6 yards per carry. Not a huge receiving threat, but hey, great news. Seattle doesn't want to throw to its early down runners anyway, so no big deal there. He just slots right into Rashad Penny's spot, and I think can probably deliver close to 100% of what you would have expected from Penny. Penny, to your point, coming off a 151-yard game, obviously carried a bunch of us to fantasy titles last year. So I'm glad we at least got to experience, not to write him off for his career. I hope Rashad Penny comes back and he's great again. But I'm glad we all got to see like what peak Rashad Penny looked like at the end of last year, because it was great.
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, for the people out there, and I'm sure there's a few who are listening to this podcast, like, you know, screaming, not in my league, Kenneth Walker, not available in my... He is only rostered in 45% of Yahoo leagues, which I expected it to be higher. I'm a little ashamed of you, Yahoo users. To be fair, I probably said at some points, like, there's not a lot of value in this Seattle running back rotation. But this is what happens. Unfortunately, injuries are... They suck, and they are an unfortunate reality of this game, especially at the running back position. When a backfield that is not condensed at all becomes suddenly condensed, that's when, and this offense is much better than we thought too. So Walker just fits every bit the profile of a guy that's going to smash the rest of the way.
I will say, coming into the year, he had, you know, there was a murky injury situation tied to Kenneth Walker, and when is he going to be available? Oh, probably not going to be at, like, missed a bunch of time, like, late in camp, late in the preseason. So that's part of it. And again, most Yahoo leagues are like 10 team leagues, and a guy who's not going to be the starting running back who has injury worries is just simply not going to get drafted in more than like 25 or 30% of leagues. The 14 team superflex that some listener of this podcast might play in is like, that's like 1% of all Yahoo fantasy leagues. So Kenneth Walker is very much available in a majority of fantasy leagues right now.
All right. Other pickups of the week here at running back, Andy, who we got?
I would say there's a clear first tier, and it's Kenneth Walker. And there's probably a pretty clear second tier, and it's Eno Benjamin, in part because he's the only obviously healthy back on the Cardinals roster right now. James Conner dealing with a rib issue. Darrell Williams picked up a knee issue in week 5. They've got Seattle coming up, and Seattle just keeps giving up 40 points to whoever it is they play, right? Like, this has been the most generous defense by a long way, giving up the most yards per play in the NFL. Like, they've just been incredibly generous. So you can expect, you know, you can expect the Cards to put up 30 plus against them. It's a great spot for Benjamin. And we have to figure that, like, even if Connor's able to play through this, we're going to see a ton of Benjamin. He's a pretty fun player. He's a more like he's smallish, right? I think he's 5'9", but he is one of those guys who plays like he doesn't know how big he is. Super competitive runner. The touchdown that he scored this past weekend, he plowed over a guy. And he's not built to plow over guys necessarily, and yet he does it occasionally. He's crazy versatile. He's actually handled a kickoff this season. So just a fun player who's going to have probably a pretty significant week 6 role against an absolutely atrocious defense. So I think Benjamin is a really interesting add. Other guys on the list would include Mike Boone, who looked pretty, you know, that was an absolutely dreadful Thursday night game. Obviously it was almost unwatchable, but Mike Boone was okay. Mike Boone saw double digit touches and was pretty good. Melvin continues to put the ball on the ground. So I would imagine that Mike Boone has a role moving forward. It's probably, once we get into some thorny bye weeks, it's probably a flex worthy role. He looked pretty good, as did Deion Jackson on the Colts side. He looked like the best Colts running back in this game. And now we're dealing with an injury to Nyheim Hines. We obviously have the injury to Jonathan Taylor. So If Deion Jackson falls into more work, I'm pretty interested in him, at least as a stream during some bye weeks. I should also mention Tevin Coleman, who had a game that he is surely not going to repeat, but he had a big game and people are adding him. And Joshua Kelly, and this is probably something that Austin can speak to on a later show, but Joshua Kelly seemed like he sure stepped into the understudy role for the Chargers. He was very good, over 80 total yards and a touchdown.
Yeah, I think Josh Kelly at this point becomes the injury insurance there in LA. I mean, I don't wish injury on any of my co-hosts, certainly not Austin, not even you, Andy. I hope you stay healthy and fit. But yeah,
Can't have the Archbishop going down, no.
No, can't have the Archbishop. As much as I love Izzy, I don't know that she's like the best backup co-host there for the Waiver Wire show. So I'm trying to get more of you guys, not less of you guys. So yeah, please stay healthy, Andy. Do your stretching, okay? Focus on flexibility, mobility. Don't just hit the squat rack all the time, all right, man? Same thing I tell Austin, man. Just don't, focus on flexibility, mobility, okay? Let's keep that in mind. But yeah, no. I do think Josh Kelly's emerged as that guy. Tevin Coleman is that guy, most likely in San Francisco, although we'll see what happens if TDP ever gets back. But yeah, these are all good names. And again, these are going to be names, you know, Benjamin notwithstanding, because it feels like James Conner's just like we're waiting for the other shoe to drop there. It's like he's in and out, in and out, in and out. These other guys, though, they can be a little difficult to roster because bye weeks are coming and, you know, Deion Jackson, Tevin Coleman, they don't give you like a guy that maybe Deion Jackson, I don't know, but like Tevin Coleman's not a guy you probably want to play. But if you can hang on to these guys, they can be season savers as well. So they're probably what we talked about last week, right? Like there's a difference between the folks who are, you know, 5-0, 4-1, and then the folks who are 1-4 trying to claw back out of this thing. If you're trying to claw back out of this thing, I'm not 100% sure Tevin Coleman is for you or Josh Kelly is for you. But if you are the good team, like I would have Josh Kelly because you probably hit on some of your wide receiver picks. Like you can go ahead and cut your wide receiver 5 and add Josh Kelly to your bench.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good call. And I think the snaps for Josh Kelly and Sony Michel were like 24-2, right? Like yes. He thoroughly outplayed him, outtouched him. So that seems like a perfectly settled situation. And I think that's I think that's a good way to put it. If you're adding Deion Jackson, that's like a super short shelf life ad, right? Like that's obviously Deion Jackson, as good as he looked against the Broncos, is not gonna, he's no threat to a healthy Jonathan Taylor's workload. Like that's, he just goes back to being a special teamer. I just thought he looked pretty lively in that Broncos game. But maybe that was just me looking for anything good in a miserable game.
Makes sense to me. All right, Andy and I are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll cover wide receivers, quarterbacks, and tight ends. All right, Andy, we're back. Bro, Jakobi Meyers, your first guy here on the list. What does Jakobi Meyers have to do to get you people out there to respect him?
I mean, I will say he'd missed a couple weeks due to injury. His team was down to its third string quarterback. Like, I get why he's eligible for this segment. He's certainly somebody where if you were, you know, a sub 500 fantasy team, you need guys who are absolutely available. But he's been great. He's coming off a 100-yard game. He made a visit to the end zone, which is not what we think of when we think of Jakobi Meyers. But it's not like he's not good at touchdowning. You know, I hate when we tag guys with that reputation. Jakobi Meyers in a better offensive ecosystem would score plenty of touchdowns. It wouldn't be an issue. Yeah. The benefit to him right now is he's seeing all the targets. He's got like a 32% target share. He's averaging 9 targets per game this year. He's very good at football, so he's catching most of them. He's gone over 200 yards in his last 2 games. Like this is clearly a guy who should be at something like 80 or 90% rostership right now. Like he's very good. He's got Cleveland coming up. It's not a stay away matchup. He's sort of got a role in the offense where you're hardly going to be like, you don't have to sweat the matchups with this guy necessarily. He is always in for significant usage, and he's pretty clearly the best receiver on this team.
Yeah, I have Devontae Parker in my drops section for this week. And like, he's not rostered in a ton of leagues, and you know, I'll just talk about it now. Like, he went down far in terms of playing time, not just in usage. I don't believe he got targeted at all in this game last week. And, you know, obviously it's Bailey Zappe, but like at the same time, it's the Lions defense, right? Like, and that's also an asterisk to put here with Jakobi Meyers' performance. But still, this is what Jakobi Meyers does all the time. He just made it into the end zone. And I'm glad you brought this up. Like, okay, DJ Moore is a better player than Jakobi Meyers, but there's no like, there's no magical reason or something that you could like fine tooth comb in DJ Moore's game that makes him not a touchdown scorer. I think the same thing is true with Jakobi Meyers. You know, look at the goofballs of quarterbacks that DJ Moore has played with. Or look at the, you know, goofball adjacents that Jakobi Meyers has played with. Obviously, he played 1 year with Tom Brady, but still, nevertheless, like, you know, Cam Newton with his arm falling off, Mac Jones as a rookie. That's why I said goofball adjacents, everybody. You know, Bailey Zappe, Brian Hoyer at different times. Like, yeah, if this offense is better, Jakobi Meyers would score more touchdowns. But also, like, everybody talks about who's the next, like, great big slot receiver. I think people forget that Jakobi Meyers is, like, 6'2", 200 pounds. Like, he is that big slot guy who gets open against zone coverage, catches everything. Just a good player, man. And I feel like he's actually set up to cruise in this Patriots offense the rest of the way. Like, I feel like it's him and Ramondre Stevenson are in pretty good spots here for the Patriots, and pretty much nobody else is.
Yeah, there's really no fantasy format in which a guy who's just clearly going to catch six or seven balls every week isn't valuable. like that'll play anywhere. And the volume here is I mean, it's settled. Like, he's going to continue at something like 8 to 10 to 12 opportunities a game. He's just somebody who should be starting almost everywhere. I don't know what his roster percentage is right now, but it's something like 48%. Yeah. I mean, he should be started in something like 65%, 70%. He's just very, very good. Again, got Cleveland coming up. Yeah. Nothing scary there. The other names on the list, and he will make the pickups column. I probably want to spend the most time on Alec Pierce. That guy's. This is three games in a row now that have been just flat out really good. He's got over 220 yards in his last three. He's averaging about 15 yards per reception. We've seen him as the you know, F it, I'm going to throw it up into the darkness and Alec Pierce will come up with it sort of receiver. But then it also feels weird that I'm talking about so many guys from one of the worst NFL games that I've watched in a while. But Alec Pierce, like, saved.
That's why they're available for the section, Andy.
Yeah. No, it's true. Alec Pierce really saved Matt Ryan's ass on a handful of throws on Thursday night. Like, Matt Ryan was terrible. And this, you know, I shouldn't use Matt Ryan being bad as a way to endorse Alec Pierce. But man, Alec Pierce really saved him on a couple of awful throws. He's just looked great. And the other thing about him is he's like a built in a lab sort of athlete too. He's 6'3", very fast, 40-inch vertical. So he checks all the athletic boxes. Little bit raw. And you can speak to that as well as anyone, but man, he has clearly earned the trust of his quarterback, and he's established himself pretty firmly, I think, now as the number two receiver for Indy.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. We do need the usage to flip a little bit. I don't know when the Colts bye week is off the top of my head, but I feel like that's a thing that we usually see with rookies. Like, they supplant the veteran that they're clearly better than right around their bye week. Because right now, the last 3 weeks, 55% in terms of routes per dropbacks for Alec Pierce. It's 85.5% for Paris Campbell. And we're certainly like in, okay, that, and like, we're definitely in enough already territory with Paris Campbell. Although Alec Pierce in the game against the Broncos, 74.5%. So you can see that starting to trend up. And I agree with you, Pierce, like, it almost get, I don't know if, I don't, it, please don't cancel me. You know, maybe John cut this out of the podcast if it's really that offensive, but I kind of feel like because he's a white guy, like, people think like he's not that athletic. Like,
yeah.
I'm sure some person who doesn't watch his game at all will call him gritty at some point. Right. But like, he's much more, my comparison for him coming into the NFL, I think we talked about this, was like the bad analysis of DK Metcalf, where he's just an athlete and runs slants, posts, and goes. And I think that's still kind of who he is, but good hands can win in tight coverage, and we've started to see that. And man, do the Colts need that dimension. So I think Pierce, you know, Sky Moore's still on this radar. Obviously, he plays tonight. You maybe this is going to look stupid by the time I say this as well, but I feel like they're the leaders in the clubhouse for the, you know, this year's Amon-Ra St. Brown, like a guy that can really be good for
you
back after the year.
Yeah, this might be a good news, bad news situation, but the Colts have their bye week in week 14. Which is nice in most cases, because, you know, like the next few weeks are going to seem so hard, and there's going to be all these guys down both due to injuries and due to buys. And it's nice to have these guys with the late buys, right? But as you say, that is often a transitional moment for young players who surge ahead of older players, right? And who really take command of a situation. So that would that would end up being pretty deep in the season when it happens. But also, I just, you know, especially right now, as you look at the sort of minefield of injuries that we're in, I kind of like having these guys with the late buys.
Yeah, 100%. All right, run me through the rest of your wide receivers here.
Yeah, as at running back, I feel like these guys are all kind of in a different lower tier. And I wouldn't make crazy offers on them. I wouldn't, you know, exhaust fab resources for them. But well, the nice thing about this first guy, Josh Reynolds, is that he's got a bye coming up. So nobody's going to be like, you're not going to be in serious competition with other people for him, because the folks who are placing aggressive bids this week are doing it because they need wins. And so anybody who's on a bye, like they're not even really looking at. Josh Reynolds has seen a ton of targets over his last three games, coming off another double digit target game. And when he sees volume, he always produces. So he's been really, really good. Something you mentioned that kind of stuck with me on FFL is that maybe he's just better than DJ Chark. Like maybe Josh Reynolds is just going to have that number two role. And we can have a separate conversation when Jameson Williams is actually ready to play and be at full strength. But right now, maybe Josh Reynolds is just the number two there, and he's looked really good. So I think he deserves a lot of attention. Again, there's not going to be a lot of competition for his services because he's on bye, and then he comes back with a game against Dallas. Other guys who are going to, you know, I see him on the most added list, and I don't have a really strong positive take on Rondale Moore. I actually really liked him coming into the league, but he finally had a game. He finally had a moderately productive game, but it happened just in time for DeAndre Hopkins to come back and steal targets from everybody on this team. So I don't really know that we're going to be firing up Rondale Moore. But I think he's moderately interesting coming off a pretty good game. Probably we don't need to spend a lot of time on the Giants receiving core, but Darius Slayton had a decent game in London. It is a rogues gallery of receivers right now among the guys who aren't hurt. Darius Slayton is probably the most competent of them. They do have a pretty interesting guy in Wandale Robinson, who's coming back presumably soon. He returned to practice last week, obviously didn't play in the game against Green Bay. I still have a little bit of hope for him because I think he slots into that Sterling Shepard role. He was just an absolutely electric college player, so he could get fun. And then I wanted to mention Khalil Shakir as well. Probably not a guy who's going to hold a lot of value when Isaiah McKenzie comes back from the concussion. He had an up and down game. He had a ball that I don't know if it'll be classified as a drop or not, but it sure looked like a drop. But he also found the end zone. Everybody found the end zone for the Bills, right? Man, Dawson Knox finally would have found the end zone, but he couldn't play in that one. That's a bummer. Yeah. But Shakir, a pretty talented guy. His value going forward probably depends on the health of other Bills receivers, however.
Yeah, certainly, though, should be on the radar because I think he's good at football, and a guy that's good at football in this offense definitely got to be on the radar. But those Giants names are good to call out as well. All right, now on to quarterbacks. Andy, the Geno experience moves on, and it moves on to Arizona this week after he's remained white hot, which got to feel pretty good.
Oh, man. He's really the only quarterback I want to talk about. We'll mention a couple other guys, but Geno Smith still widely available. I get it. Like nobody seems to fully trust it. This is seven touchdown passes in his last three games. He is currently leading the NFL. I mean, we're 5 weeks in. He's currently leading the NFL in both passer rating and in completion percentage. His completion percentage is greater than 75. He's hitting everything. And sometimes the answer is as simple as he gets to throw to Tyler Lockett and he gets to throw to DK Metcalf. And there have been plays with those two for the last three games. Like, it's crazy that back in August, we were watching Lockett and Metcalf just sink like stones in drafts. Everybody circled around him. Nobody, especially like it was even worse, I think, in industry drafts, right? Like nobody wanted to be the guy in the industry who actually drafted Tyler Lockett. What are you kidding? I was in salary cap drafts where Lockett went for like $5, $6, like absolutely nobody wanted in. And Lockett.
I took him in the, I think in the 11th round of the Scott Fishbowl, dude, like 11th round. I took him in.
I mean, that's wild.
I will, like, this is not a victory lap at all, but I mean, I'm a Lockett guy. Like I could not sit there and click like, you know, Marvin Jones over Tyler Lockett. Okay. Or whatever. Like it was always goofball receiver who I think is cooked B or Tyler Lockett as the A choice. And I do have a lot of teams with Tyler Lockett. I wish I had more teams with DK Metcalf on it. I wish I took DK Metcalf over like Juju Smith-Schuster or whatever, who, again, I keep talking about guys who are going to play tonight. Maybe he scored 3 touchdowns finally, probably not. But yeah, like I wish I had more Metcalf teams, have a lot of Lockett teams, because it's just like, what were we doing letting guys that are this good at football fall this far?
Yeah. And like Geno's pushing the ball downfield. The pass attempts have been great. His, you know, not that it's a major factor in his forecast moving forward, but his own team's defense is terrible. So this is going to be a team that finds it's, you know, Seattle's found itself in shootouts the past 2 weeks. There's going to be shootouts for this team all year. There's probably one coming up against Arizona. Geno's just been great. Like, I don't see any end to this. And I just realized on Sunday that his championship week matchup is with the Jets, which how fun is that? Oh, right? Like
revenge game, baby.
Yeah, we've got every possible narrative there. I love it. Like I finally made the move to start Geno over I'm starting him over Matt Stafford in a league. I got a league where dropped Russell Wilson for him. Like I finally rolled him out last week after watching all these points accumulate on my bench, and I'm feeling pretty good about it. And I'm feeling good about it this week. I think he's the clear priority at quarterback for, again, this is one of those guys, I get it. Like you're in a much deeper league. I'm sure Geno Smith was gone in your league 2 weeks ago. And yet he's still out there in a majority of Yahoo leagues. And most of you can pull the trigger.
I mean, I just think it's worth talking about players like this. He's only rostered in 35% of Yahoo leagues. Okay. So, I mean, I think there's more than enough,
which is probably a lot based on where he came into the season. I'm sure he came into the season rostered in like 1 or 2%. So it's a lot of activity to get a guy up to 35% when he's rostered nowhere, to begin the season. He's just, I got nothing bad to say about his performance today. Like, eye test, analytics, like there's nothing you can look at to indicate that Geno has been like secretly bad. He's been good.
Yeah. You know, it just dawned on me, and I don't know if anybody else has made this comparison. If you have, I'm sorry. He's, to me, Geno Smith 2022 is like Ryan Fitzpatrick 2015 with the Jets, where he was a vagabond veteran quarterback, but got to play in a pretty fun offense with two great receivers in Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker when those guys were still really, really good. And Fitz, you know, based on your scoring system, he was like a top 12 quarterback that year.
Yeah.
He was, and it was kind of the same situation where it was, okay, all right, when is it, like, when is Fitz going to turn back into a pumpkin, right? And he never, I mean, they flamed out at the end of that year, right? But the Jets went 10-6. They were competitive. They almost went to the playoffs, I think. You know, 5.5% touchdown rate for Ryan Fitzpatrick in 2015. I mean, Geno might, just because they were in a bit of a different era right now overall, but like Geno's probably going to blow those raw stats away, but he could end up being a top 12 quarterback in fantasy simply, like you said, to bring it back around, simply because he's not horrible. And that's what I wish I had been a little nicer about Geno, like that he's like a backup level quarterback in the NFL. He's a competent quarterback in the NFL, and he gets to throw to Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, just like Ryan Fitzpatrick, competent backup level quarterback, got to throw to Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker, and the results were really, really good all year long.
That's such a good call out. It's such a good comp. And like, he feels like a player who may age like that too, because I mean, Fitzpatrick had a bunch of moments late in his career, and obviously he was great for that half season in Miami as well. He just reached a sweet spot in his career where he'd seen everything. There was nothing you could show him that he wasn't ready for, and he may not have been, obviously he wasn't, you know, a top 10 in the positional ranks level talent, but you know, he'd seen it all and he was still physically capable of doing everything he needed to do. And he was like a really good fantasy start for the back end of his career, which is not how it often happens, but that may very well be what we get with Geno. And he'd been a punchline for so long. It's just such a wonderful story.
Literally a punchline, Andy.
Yeah.
Laugh at my joke. No, I'm just kidding. go through the rest of the quarterbacks, please, before I say anything else.
No, I don't even like I don't even want to mention the other quarterbacks, right? Because I feel like it taints a lovely discussion about Geno Smith, who's been this terrific story. But I do like I feel almost, you know, obligated to mention to people that and listen, this is a use at your own risk quarterback, and I assume no blame in this situation when it blows up. But I will just tell you that Carson Wentz is playing the Bears on Thursday night. You don't have to watch it. I'll watch it.
Don't
I'll
watch it
for you.
Specifically, don't watch it. I
might actually
go
friend. To it. I may go to it.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what you're doing, man.
John That's Daigle and bizarre. I were just talking about. We were at a bar watching a perfectly terrible Broncos Colts game, and we were like, you know what wouldn't surely be any worse than this is the Commanders and Bears next Thursday. So we may actually go to that live. It's so rare that I get to see a game live that I may just do it. Anyway, Carson Wentz playing the Bears. I disavow this recommendation. I take no responsibility for it, nor does Yahoo Inc., nor do any of our corporate partners. But hey, Carson Wentz playing the Bears. It's a good spot. He's got great receivers. Jimmy Garoppolo is facing Atlanta. You know what you're getting with Jimmy. It's 210 yards and either one or two touchdowns. He'll never throw for more. That's it. Those are all of my quarterbacks as you lift the aquarium to your face.
Yeah, bad timing there. Bad podcasting. Let's move to tight ends real quickly because I got an ice cube that just went down my throat.
I hate talking about Taysom Hill. It's so hard. Maybe it's easy. I don't know. Maybe we can make it easy. He's another one of those guys that has a really late bye. So if you're just fed up with tight ends generally and you just want to park Taysom Hill in your tight end spot, even though the team says he's a tight end, he's certainly not playing tight end. But he's going to get 5 rush attempts a game, and oftentimes they are near the goal line. And hey, he's surely just had his best game of the year, right? 3 rushing touchdowns and a passing touchdown. He's almost certainly not doing that again. But is there another 2 touchdown game out there? Sure, it's Taysom Hill, and they're still doing all the fun gimmicky stuff with Taysom Hill that they always did. I don't know when it's coming. He's not. You don't really look at matchups with a guy like this, right? Like he's such an oddball player. But I do understand if you just want to park Taysom Hill in the tight end spot and wash your hands of this position. I totally get it. Again, it's the late bye. That works. It's wild to me as well that he is actually, the last time I checked on Monday, Taysom Hill and not Kenneth Walker was the most added player in Yahoo Fantasy. I just think that's kind of crazy. I mean, that's just like you're really going to chase that week. You think that week is happening again? I think the flip side of that game, and I realized there were a bunch of really frustrated.
Well, just real quick on Taysom. The deal is with Taysom, like, yeah, sure. There's that 34-point game. The floor is quite literally zero. Which fair enough. Like Dawson Knox's floor is literally zero, right? I mean that's okay. But you know, I believe he did not record any sort of offensive touches in week 3. Tampa Bay 1.4 points. So I mean, there's part of me would, before even putting this together, was like, you should add Taysom Hill just to piss off your league mates, okay? Like just to be just to have them like fired up in the group chat every week, you know, that you got 34 points from a not tight end. But at the same time, also be prepared to piss yourself off when he does that, okay? So just remember that there's going to be no predicting the Taysom Hill stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the argument against it is the entire position is basically that way, right? Like there are guys seeing decent target volume and not finding the end zone. But the whole position outside of Andrews and Kelsey is a little bit of a wasteland. So if you just care about, you know, if you want to just look at it and say, I only care about ceiling, and I know that my ceiling with Taysom Hill is another 30-point game out there somewhere, I totally get it, but you're also completely right. You're going to have to live with the likelihood of probably more than one 0-point fantasy performance out there at some point. I was going to say that I actually think, you know, there's a lot of reasons to worry if you're an Alvin Kamara owner, manager. He's not, you know, he's not, I don't know if he has a carry yet in like when they get in goal to go situations. I don't even know if he has a carry yet this season, but it was a really productive game for him. Huge yardage game, huge in terms of usage. So that was good to see. Yes, I realized Taysom Hill took all of his touchdowns, and that is super frustrating. But it just in terms of usage and how good he looked, whether he looked like Alvin Kamara, yes, he emphatically did. So I thought it was a good game for Kamara. It's just, you know, Taysom Hill stole all the good stuff. Other tight ends that I would take a look at, we mentioned Hayden Hurst earlier. He found the end zone again. He's been really good. Obviously, if T. Higgins is going to be out, sure seems like they're going to be targeting Hayden Hurst a fair amount. And, you know, when teams give him that, you know, when teams endeavor to take away the deep ball that they really want to throw every time they drop back, like Hayden Hurst is there and Joe Burrow is finding him lately. So that's encouraging. Evan Engram also finally had it wasn't a great game, right? 69 receiving yards, but 10 targets. Like he finally had the workload that I was thinking he might get earlier in the season. He was a guy who at least the people around the Jaguars were kind of buzzing about throughout the summer. So it was nice to finally see some results there in an otherwise absolutely miserable game for the Jags. They've really face planted since I started to get excited about them a couple of weeks ago. They've been terrible.
Yeah, same here. Well, we're dropping expectations for the Jaguars, Andy. Who should the people out there be dropping it on their fantasy teams?
Yeah, the people should get Russell Wilson the hell off their fantasy rosters.
Like,
This is really bad. And if you, I mean, I would have had no problem if you dropped him in the middle of the Thursday night game, right? Like just drop him to be rid of it. And to stop looking at the name and thinking about it, because this is, you know, it's like an exaggerated version of the DJ Moore situation that we were talking about, where like we've had a lot of good times with Russell Wilson. You're going to see his name on your bench and be like, oh man, I should start Russell. He's got this thing could be a shootout against whoever, the Chiefs, whoever, right? The Chargers. It does not look like he is capable of supporting a shootout right now. And I know there's an injury situation here as well that he's going to be playing through. I can't say that I think his problems this year have been injury related or velocity related. They are decision making and familiarity with his receiving core and perhaps the quality of his receivers as well, a point that you've made previously. It's just not the same. I can't tell you when I'm next going to have Russell Wilson as a top 12 fantasy quarterback. And like in most leagues, you don't even need to carry a second QB. Like no good team is starting Russell Wilson right now. So I think he's not only a drop. I think he's an exciting, emphatic drop.
Yeah, just get him off there. I agree with you. Vibes are bad. You know, the injury news is bad. There's just nothing good, no hope to hold on to, I think, with Russell Wilson. That, you know, maybe like I've seen a lot of Denver fans say, oh, well, Aaron Rodgers in this offense, like he took a while to get going. And, you know, and okay, well, it didn't. Number one, even if that's an applicable like situation here with Russ, he didn't really get it going until the next year, right? And also, like, okay, just because this is the offensive coordinator with the Packers does not mean this is like what about this Denver Broncos offense looks like what the Packers did the last few years. I would say nothing. Just because Nathaniel Hackett happened to be in the building and was like Aaron Rodgers enjoyed making fun of him and doing Jeopardy questions with him does not mean that this is going to be the same situation. Like Matt LaFleur is not a part of this. By the way, Aaron Rodgers is not a part of this. Like, you know, Russell Wilson's not Aaron Rodgers because he's not as good as Aaron Rodgers. Like there is that as well. Couple drops I've got for you. I talked about Devontae Parker. I think Chase Edmonds, like I think he's going to be a guy that sure. If Raheem Mostert gets hurt and everybody drops Chase Edmonds, we'll probably all be telling you to pick up Chase Edmonds. So do keep that in mind. Raheem Mostert, obviously a guy who struggled with injuries in the past, but it sure looks like this operation has flipped to Raheem Mostert. Getting a little bit of like Jerick McKinnon 49ers vibes with Chase Edmonds, where they went out and spent a bunch of money on Chase Edmonds and really don't, they'll just throw anybody else in there to follow the money thing. Frank Schwab was kind of right about that. Like Frank's like, I always follow the money except with Chase Edmonds. So far so good there, Frank Schwab, on that one. I don't know how you would ever have any confidence playing Chase Edmonds, and it would take an injury to make it happen, and that's going to be a tough guy to hold through the bye weeks.
I agree with that. And Miles Gaskin played a little bit in week five. So like Edmonds might not even be the answer if anything happens to Mostert. And I fully agree with you on Mostert. Like it seemed like it was happening a couple weeks ago. He finally played over 70% of the snaps, but another part of me also thought, well, this is just kind of a spin the wheel backfield. And, you know, Edmonds keeps finding the end zone and they clearly still like him to some extent. Well, that does not seem to be the case after week five. They got a lot of problems and they are just sort of setting Chase Edmonds aside right now. And again, I'm not even sure he's the backup right now.
I'm not sure either. Josh Palmer, I think the closer Keenan Allen is to returning, the sooner you can get Josh Palmer, who's also a little banged up himself, off your roster. The point of Josh Palmer was, I don't know what the point of Josh Palmer was, but like if you drafted him, you were like, I'm hoping to play him during like the stretch where Mike Williams or Keenan Allen misses games. Well, that stretch is almost over, I feel like, with Keenan Allen, although Keenan Allen's mostly like tweeting on Sunday like he's a fan about Brandon Staley's fourth down decision. Can't wait to talk to Austin about that. I feel like the Josh Palmer thing, like you can go ahead and drop that guy at this point.
Yeah, no argument there. He had some opportunities, didn't fully take advantage of them. Some of it, I'm sure, is injury related, but turns out he's not Keenan Allen.
What a shock. All right, hold on loosely here, Andy. You've got Antonio Gibson, which I think is fascinating for a couple of reasons, because we talked with Carson Wentz earlier, and I agree with your point. I talked to our mutual friend Chris Harris this morning, like, you can play Carson Wentz, but don't watch Carson Wentz like on Thursday night. Right. Ron Rivera this morning, he's saying to the media, like the difference between us and all the other NFC East teams is like the quarterback situation, which he then said some parts of things about Carson Wentz that were, you know, mildly complimentary, all that. But it was a little strange. Like, I mean, not really, pal. One of these teams is starting Cooper Rush and the other is starting Daniel Jones. I don't think that's what it is. But he also said, like, oh, Antonio Gibson might have opportunities to be, you know, to return some kicks now that Brian Robinson is healthy. So you want people to hold on to the Washington Commanders kick returner.
I will tell you that I just wanted to shoehorn Antonio Gibson into the conversation somewhere, and I'm not at all sure that I would hold on to him because he barely played. like Brian Robinson came back, and we thought, wow, what a great story. Brian Robinson coming back. He'll probably have a small role. It wasn't necessarily a small role. It sure looked like Antonio Gibson was like the number three running back on this team, perhaps behind J.D. McKissick. He played 20 snaps. He saw 6 touches. The only argument that I can make to hold on to him is I think he's pretty good. I thought he was borderline heroic last year, playing through I've made the point before. Guy played through a broken leg last year. He played through a stress fracture in his leg. And the team gave us the usual BS about how he couldn't make a stress fracture worse by playing on. Of course he could. He played through it. Tremendous season, and he's been rewarded with that by apparently being the return man for this team. It's pretty wild. I think he's good. I can tell you that I've got him in 4 leagues, and I'm not going to drop him in any of them, but I get it. I'm totally willing to look the other way if you feel you need to.
Dude, they love Brian Robinson, and I mean, it's an awesome story. We should all be rooting for Brian Robinson. They played Many Men by 50 Cent as he walked out of the tunnel onto the field yesterday, which is just hilarious. But they love that. Dude, they love that guy. So I don't know with the they clearly love him more than they love Antonio Gibson. My two guys here, I added AJ Dillon because Lord Podcast asked me yesterday, like, how soon are we to like dropping AJ Dillon? Don't drop AJ Dillon. I know he's been a very, very frustrating fantasy player. I mean, and his target percentage seems to come down every single week. You know, Aaron Rodgers talked about how he was going to get both these running backs into the 50 catch club. I don't think so, pal. Not the way things are going. And I guess there's an argument to be made that they are kind of settling on a 3 receiver set of Alan Lazard, Randall Cobb, and Romeo Doubs. And because those guys have, I'll call it, sort of emerged, that it takes away some of the receiving juice from the running backs. But I feel like you need to hold on to AJ Dillon, because if you drop AJ Dillon and Aaron Jones, like, you know, slips on a banana peel tomorrow, you'll be furious.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't like, I'd feel a whole lot better with AJ Dillon on a roster than Antonio Gibson on a roster right now.
Yeah.
I think AJ Dillon is absolutely somebody that you hold on to. He's going to be difficult to start. We're probably not going to rank him as a top 20 fantasy running back anytime soon. But as you say, anything at all happens to Aaron Jones, and Dillon is a top 10 guy at the position, almost without respect to who they play. He's still seeing enough volume that you can flex him. I mean, we're getting into bye weeks. Like, you're almost certainly not going to drop AJ Dillon during the byes.
Yeah, he's a touchdown or bust type of guy, but I mean, you could be a lot worse than that. I mean, some of the talk after week one that AJ Dillon was going to be like a better fantasy player than Aaron Jones is, that was pretty laughable. I think there was a little too much excitement about AJ Dillon in general.
I mean, you weren't laughing at the time.
you weren't laughing
after week one.
I was not laughing at the Aaron Jones part of it. You're right. No, you're right. Let me just say, I was not laughing at the time. I was pretty freaked out about Aaron Jones specifically. Feeling better though. I feel moderately
as you
better.
Should, as you should.
I mean, I can't wait for the next Bears game, but that's really the thing we're all waiting on here. Other guy that I've got hold on loosely here is Elijah Moore. I'm saying this because I told people to draft Elijah Moore. A lot about the Jets situation is unforeseen. A lot about it probably should have been given more credit to, but I don't. Andy, what you tell me? Would you drop Elijah Moore? I'm holding on to him because I think he is a legitimately good player, and I think he's playing legitimately well, and I think he's getting a lot of opportunity from a playing time perspective. It might not be the year for Elijah Moore, but I think he's a guy I want to hold on to at least a little while longer.
Yeah, I can't. You know, some of this is relative to expectations, I guess. The leagues in which I've got Elijah Moore are deep enough that there's not a comparable guy out there. You know, if I were to drop Elijah Moore, I'd be adding, I don't know, Deion Jackson. I'm not making that transaction, right? Like, Elijah Moore is not, he's not somebody who should be kicked to the curb. I don't know. Like, if you're in a, you've already described a situation where you're in a 10 team league, something like that. You're loaded at receiver and Elijah Moore is like your fifth or sixth guy. I would get it. If Elijah Moore gets dropped in your mom's league, we're probably not even talking about it. That's not going to be the most notable drop of the week. So in a certain format, I guess I can imagine it, but 12 teams and larger. I can't believe it's not going to come around to Elijah Moore at some point. I can't believe there's not going to be an Elijah Moore week or three.
I agree with you. Julie, by the way, still's got Elijah Moore on her roster. I can't believe that. We'll see.
That's like the one player we're loyal to in your mom's league. Wow.
Well, we'll see. Last thing before we get to my mom's league, getting in early, Andy, we've got Rashad White here. I feel like we talk about Rashad White in this segment pretty much every single week. I also like that we mentioned Sky Moore earlier. Even Alec Pierce, I think, is a guy that like, you're kind of getting in early, but maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's just here. I'll also nominate Van Jefferson here. That it's probably not the time to add Van Jefferson because he's going to probably still miss a little bit of time. But dude, you watch Rams offense and like they need Van Jefferson, which I that was an injury that I wish we didn't like yada yada over in the preseason because I feel like we kind of did because Van Jefferson can play. Like Van Jefferson is good, and my God, do they need a vertical X receiver? Because I don't think Allen Robinson is totally washed, but I don't think he can be their vertical X receiver, and that's kind of what they're asking him to do right now. And like Van Jefferson did play that role for this team last year.
Yeah, played it really effectively, and otherwise that guy is like Tutu Atwell, and they're just flat out, like whatever we think about Allen Robinson, they're not targeting him. I mean, it's five or six targets a week and no more. So that is a really good call. Yeah, the reason I list Rashad White here in part is because I just don't think, especially this week, like people are going to be going all in on Kenneth Walker, and understandably so. And behind Kenneth Walker, people are going to have Eno Benjamin. Like there's a couple of clear guys at the top of the board. And Rashad White, again, I know we've said it before, he is somebody who would be absolutely must start if anything were to happen to Leonard Fournette, because he's clearly the understudy there. And he's actually been playing a little bit these last 2 weeks, 39% of the snaps the last 2 weeks, 8 touches in each of those games, had a touchdown a couple weeks ago. Like this is a very good player and a very good receiver. It is not difficult to imagine Rashad White being that, you know, league winner type in the second half of the season, going on a, I'm not going to say Rashad Penny level binge, but going on a nice little binge late in the year. If anything were to happen to Fournette at all, you would be rolling this guy out there every week, and he could potentially carry you. Just an absolutely wonderful receiving threat. Great fit for the offense.
All right, Andy, the segment that America loves. There were a lot of drops in the Treviso Babes League, my mom's league. If you're not familiar with the segment, my mom is playing fantasy football for the first time this year. It consumes probably 80% of our discussions these days, me and my mother, which is I've been playing fantasy football since I was, you know, early in high school. And I would say that prior to this year, it consumed 0% of our 0 to maybe 0.5% of the discussions I had with my mother. It is very clearly flipped on its head. So we talk about fantasy a lot, but the drops in this league are absolutely wild. Andy, there were so many. I just want to give you kind of like the broad strokes and see if you can get one. I think at this point you kind of get the trend of who gets dropped in this league. I know last time we talked last week, it was Damian Pierce. Mom added Damian Pierce, ended up winning that matchup, which is great because she has Rashad Penny, you know, and that was like her RB too. So that was the big one. Darren Waller was a big one last week. Got any guesses for this week?
Man, I'm still floored that Damian Pierce was dropped coming off like a couple of very good games. Like Damian Pierce hadn't done anything wrong. Wasn't hurt. Like there was just no glaring issue there. That is wild. And now we're coming into the buys. So like as crazy as the drops have been, they're going to get a little nuttier. Was DeAndre Swift dropped?
No, not quite that high. These folks do still seem to value the running back position pretty highly. The only big name running back who's been, you know, dropped is obviously Javonte Williams. They do seem to hold on to like the high end running backs pretty. So no big running backs this week.
Was Keenan Allen dropped?
Keenan Allen was dropped. Keenan Allen now currently in my mom's IR spot, by the way. she dropped Russell Wilson. She took your advice. Andy, you know, this is my mom dunking on you again here. She dropped Russell Wilson leading into this week. After Thursday night, but you know, whatever. She dropped Russell Wilson to add Keenan Allen to get into the IR spot because we had to take Brian Robinson out of the IR spot. It's the whole thing. But yeah, I was actually a little once she dropped Russell Wilson, I was like, you know what, mom? Like, you know, these folks do hoard backup quarterbacks too. I mean, like, we're looking at, you know, if Russell Wilson stands out like a sore thumb next to, you know, Jacoby Brissett, Jameis Winston, Taysom Hill, Garoppolo, Mac Jones, like Kenny Pickett. That's what we're looking at. But whatever, it was worth the roster spot. A couple other guys. You want to guess any others? Or you want me to just give you the rest of them?
No, guys? Give it to me.
Michael Thomas dropped. Rashad Bateman dropped. DeAndre Hopkins has been on the wire forever. Yeah, Keenan Allen was definitely the big one. Cam Akers, 100% dropped. Although that one, like, you know what? I can get it. Hunter Renfro was dropped, added back. He's on Jennifer's team. Jennifer seems to be doing a lot of these drops.
I should have guessed Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas fits the profile of a drop in this league perfectly.
And you know what? I'm not even going to be like, because mom is a reception subscriber. She's got Chris Olave on the roster. I'm almost not like, you know, I'm not even like, mom, maybe you should think about picking up Michael Thomas. No, just forget it. We've already got the best Saints receiver.
Poor Olave. That was one of the, you know, there were some obviously more significant injuries this past week. But man, Olave also a hero, by the way, for scoring a touchdown on the play in which he was injured. So hopefully he makes it back real soon.
Yeah, we shall see. All right, in the meantime, that is going to do it for us. You can follow Andy on Twitter at Andy Behrens if you don't already. And if you aren't already, come on, what are you doing with yourself? You can follow me on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB. And while you're there, make yourself a better fantasy player and improve your timeline by following at Yahoo Fantasy. Austin Eckler will be back tomorrow following yet another huge performance against the Browns. We'll talk about it all on the new episode of Eckler's Edge. Until then, we're out.